Hello and welcome to the show. My first guest today is Tony Gosling. Tony is a freelance radio journalist who specializes in the subjects of Bilderberg, the Illuminati, and the Freemasons. Later we'll be joined by Freemason and Provincial Grand Secretary of South Wales, Jim Bevan. But to begin with, Tony Gosling, welcome to the show. So Tony, to begin with, tell the audience a bit about your work and what you do.
Well, I was brought up in a family in aviation and then got into radio journalism working with the BBC in London as a researcher, then as a reporter. And I found it actually very difficult within the constraints of the BBC to do some of the subjects which I thought were most important for the public. And that's why, in a way, one of the reasons why we're here today is to talk about a subject which is essentially taboo in this country.
Okay, and let's discuss some of these subjects then. So one thing I wanted to touch on to begin with, obviously we're going to talk about Freemasons and the Freemasonry, and I want to talk about Bilderberg first, because that's something that you specialise in as well. That's something you've independently researched.
Well, the connections aren't necessarily easy for people to understand between the Bilderbergers and the Freemasons. So let's start off by explaining what the Bilderberg is. Bilderberg is a conference which started in 1954 in Oosterbeek in Holland, which was where the Operation Market Garden, a disastrous actually airborne landing, took place in the Second World War, in a hotel owned by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. The problem I have with the Bilderbergs is that the founding chairman, Prince Bernhard, who owned that hotel, was himself an SS officer in the early stages in the run-up to the Second World War. So somebody who's the founding member is also a member of the Nazi SS. I immediately, gets my hackles up, and I want to find out a little bit more about this organisation, because they're telling us that they're benign, essentially. So these meetings that the Bilderberg have every year, and of course they may have other meetings in between, are essentially the richest and most powerful people in Europe coming together in secret. The problem I have is not that these people are having a private meeting, it's that the politicians who are in there, who are they accountable to while they're in these meetings? And these people do control most of the money in the Western world.
Who are these people?
Well, Henry Kissinger, there's also Kenneth Clark, the Justice Secretary. There's a whole range of particular individuals who are involved, including the royalty. But they are mostly business owners and bankers. I mean, we're obviously living in this financial crisis at the moment. There's many people pointing the finger at the bankers. And yet we're told that we're supposed to just trust these guys to get on with managing the economy. It's quite clear they've made a total mess of it. And so there needs to be more, they need to open up these meetings to the public so that at least they allow press to come along. As it is, it's up to people like me and other people on the internet, on internet forums, to actually track them down. Ordinary people like you and I have to find out where they're going to be meeting.
So where did the last Bilderberg meeting take place?
In Greece, I think it was last year. Portugal last year. But it happens in all over the Western world. That is basically the NATO countries. And it's not a coincidence that it's the NATO zone that the Bilderberg represents, because they also pick the Secretary Generals of NATO. Now, NATO, the connection with the military is also rather worrying, because, you know, we set up NATO after the Second World War as a kind of peaceful alliance, a defensive alliance, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So if any of the countries in that North Atlantic Treaty Organization were attacked by, for example, the Soviet Union or the Chinese or whatever, they would all act together to defend each other. Right. NATO has completely changed from that into an aggressive force, where it's actually going out now occupying and invading countries. Obviously, they come up with reasons which they're, you know, they're saying, oh, we're there to defend civilians. So what we've got here is a financial elite, and they're connected in with the military too.
So you're saying this secret group, this Bilderberg group...
The connections between the Freemasons, though, we haven't come to...
No, we haven't. We're going to get to that. But this secret group is ruling the world, in your opinion.
I don't think it's fair to say they're ruling the world, but they do have an immense amount of clout through the financial power that they've got. The European Central Bank, the IMF, the World Bank, all the central banks of Europe are connected in one way or another with this, through the Bank for International Settlements, also the Federal Reserve in the United States. So as you can see, as everyone is pointing the finger at bankers, I say, have a look at the Bilderberg, have a look at secret political meetings which are going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And actually what's happening is, as the financial crisis is kicking in, more mainstream newspapers like The Guardian, Charlie Skelton's been writing for The Guardian, are actually starting to cover these meetings, and they're saying, hang on, what's going on inside?
So are you saying that, what's wrong, to begin with having a secret agenda? What's wrong?
Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with having a private meeting. But when you're talking about massive areas of public policy within that private meeting, and when you've got politicians like Ken Clark, I mean, we have to question Ken Clark, for example. What is his motive in going to a secret meeting of the most powerful financial elite of Europe and North America? Is his loyalty to us, the public, or is it to them? And I think there's some serious questions. In the United States, this is actually illegal. He could be arrested for, it's a criminal offence, for our politicians, our public representatives, to go along to secret meetings without having some kind of explanation about what they're doing there.
So how do you know about the Bilderberg then, if it's secret? Why isn't mainstream media covering this?
Well, the mainstream media doesn't cover it, largely because they don't know it's happening. One of the things that I've tried to do over the years is to help make sure that we actually do know ahead of the event where it's happening. I can remember going to one of these meetings over in Belgium. This is probably, was it near 2000? And we had the mayor turn up on site, and he was told, yes, we've got Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, we've got kings and queens of Europe, Prince Beatrix of the Netherlands here.
Right.
And he said, I don't believe you. If this was to have happened, I would have been told. But of course, as it turned out, it was this secret meeting taking place with all the dignitaries of Europe, and the next day it was on the main pages of the Belgian newspapers.
My final question right now regarding the Bilderberg subject, surely how do you know that it's not just good intent they've got?
We mustn't forget the connections between Freemasonry and Bilderberg. I mean, I'm not saying that this is a totally Masonic institution, but there are some important ones. Joseph Rettinger, one of the founders, who was a Pole, he was working for MI6, according to Stephen Dorrell in his book, The History of MI6. Joseph Rettinger definitely was a Freemason, and people in Poland now are actually writing a lot in Polish, funnily enough, about Rettinger's history as a Freemason.
Bilderberg connection.
So he was the founder of Bilderberg alongside Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands back in the 1950s. The other thing is we've got Andrew Palmer, who's the PA, was the PA to the Grand Master of Freemasonry in the world, that is the Duke of Kent, and he actually was the organiser of the last Bilderberg conference to happen in Britain. So there clearly is, that was in 1998, by the way, in Scotland, so there clearly is quite a close connection. If it's the PA of the Grand Master of World Freemasonry organising Bilderberg conference, but I challenge the Freemasons to say this isn't a Masonic event.
Okay, then let's get into the Freemasons then. Tell me what you know about the Freemasons.
Well,
research.
I really know through two sources, I suppose. One is through reading books about Freemasonry, such as Stephen Knight's The Brotherhood and Martin Short's Inside the Brotherhood. There's also another one called From Darkness to Light, which is an older expose, which is, I mean, this is a big thing. In the 1940s, actually, somebody got the Freemasons' initiation ceremony, got all the little gaps in it, because when they print it in books, they leave gaps filled in, and published that for the first time. So these several bits of the secrets of the Freemasons have been leaking out bit by bit over the years. And so that's one of the sources. The other sources is through my own friends who are Freemasons. I mean, I'm not here to condemn Freemasonry as a whole. And I think there are some very good Freemasons. But the thing is, unfortunately, it's a little bit like big business. It tends to propel the people who are more ruthless and greedy into some of the more important positions. And also, there are all sorts of fights going on within Masonic lodges, whereas, say, for example, a good benevolent person, this is as you would imagine, say, in a golf club or something. Someone is a good benevolent leader or a president of the golf club, finds himself stabbed in the back by, not literally, you know, metaphorically, stabbed in the back by someone who actually is ruthless and just wants to take the club over for their own gain.
What's your understanding of the beliefs of Freemasonry, then?
Well, this is a difficult one, isn't it? What do Freemasons believe? I'm sure, you know, you can ask our Freemason friend who's coming on in a minute about this, but one thing I'll tell you that they say about themselves is that you do have to believe in a sort of God figure of some sort, that is to say, a creator or a supreme power.
What's wrong with that?
I don't have any problem with that at all.
Right.
And the other thing is you really do have to promise when you join to keep these secrets of Freemasonry secret. And that I do have a problem with. I think we've got almost like an epidemic of secrecy in our society. If we look at accountability in all sorts of areas of our lives, within right. the law, within justice, within government, we've really got to see, I think, more openness.
Okay, but the Freemasons are being open. Jim's coming on here in a minute, so, you know...
Is he letting you film one of his initiation ceremonies?
I've not asked him that.
Right. Well, I would tell you, very, very unlikely that they will allow you to film the entire ceremony from beginning to end, which takes about an hour.
But that doesn't mean they're a secret society, though, does it?
Yes, I think it does mean they're a secret society. Yeah, yeah. Yes, because you've got... okay, ultimately... you can spin things any way you want.
Yeah.
You can say, as the Freemasons do, we are society with secrets. But actually, I think at the core of it, there is a lot of secrecy. For example, we want to know if our MP is a Freemason and if our MP has a relationship through the lodge with, say, for example, one of our big local businesses mm-hmm. who stands to gain. I'm afraid the problem is with Freemasonry is that if we simply don't know who the large Freemasonic players are in any city or in the countryside in Britain or in central government or in any place where there's power, then we can't see what's going on behind the scenes. For example, contracts being done, signed with public money going to Freemasons. And also, one thing you'll find right across the country is you often find Freemasons on planning committees.
Has Freemasons ever caused you any problems, Tony?
Well, I think it's difficult to tell if you don't know if someone is a Freemason
yeah,
or not.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately, no, I mean, I've never been... I've got a lot... Like I say, yeah. I know people who are Freemasons who are friends, but it's also... There is a sort of problem that you've got a different...
Right.
You've got the possibility, and I'm sure this is quite sure through ex-Freemasons I've spoken to, of corruption brewing within these little secret groups.
We're going to have to take a break there, so stay with us, Tony. Okay, we're going to take a break now, but after we'll continue to speak to Tony, and we'll also be joined by Freemason Jim Bevan.
Visit themoreshow.co.uk/shop to purchase products and services from your favourite past guests. If you're new to this site, you can also catch up on the previous television and radio shows through YouTube and the More Show website.
Welcome back. I'm joined with radio journalist Tony Gosling and Provincial Grand Secretary of South Wales of the Freemasons, Jim Bevan. Now, Jim, just tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, my profession was that of a quantity surveyor. I gave that about 23 years ago and was then invited to join the staff at the provincial office here in Cardiff for the South Wales Freemasons. 2 years later, I was appointed as provincial secretary, and I've been in post now 21 years. Job I enjoy doing, somewhat different to what I was doing before, no commercial pressure, and perhaps a little bit more job satisfaction in finishing the day knowing you've done somebody some good rather than you made somebody some money.
So let's... you're a Freemason. Mm. Just tell me a bit about what that entails for you.
I was brought up in very much in a working class home. My father was a trade unionist and a very staunch member of the Labour Party at the time he died. However, nonetheless, he had a very great respect for the Masonic movement and always encouraged me that if I had the opportunity to join, that I should. My only regret is that he did not live long enough to see me get to where I am today within the order, but he did live long enough to see me initiated into Freemasonry, and he was quite pleased about that.
Right. And, what's the sort of stipulation to become a Freemason?
First of all, you need to have the time and the interest in it. Your main qualification is that you must believe in a supreme being, in whatever shape or form that supreme being may take. If you're an atheist, you cannot belong to the Freemasons. Other than that, if you have a love of the spoken word and the written word, that helps, though not everybody is, as we say, a good ritualist, and other people serve the craft in different ways, in their own ways, in administrative capacities, as almoners, and as stewards in their lodge.
Okay then, Tony, what do you think about the idea of a supreme being?
Well, the supreme being might be Lucifer. The supreme being might be the devil.
Right. And what's your opinion on that?
Well, I'm not going to get into the esoteric side of this. However, all I would say to you is that we are filming this in Cardiff within 400 yards from the Masonic Hall. The Masonic Hall, I would put to you, Tony, is the only place in Cardiff where you will find a Jew, a Muslim, a Sikh, a Hindu, and a Christian sitting down in harmonious fellowship, enjoying each other's company in disinterested friendship. I'm not quite sure whether the devil might fit into that.
Well, I mean, you have actually said it's okay for any kind of spirituality. In a way, that's a deism, isn't it? It's like you're not actually sticking to anything particularly Christian.
No.
It's just anything goes.
It is purely a secular organisation. The two subjects of discussion that are specifically banned in any Masonic lodge is that of politics and religion. Therefore, I don't think it's really much of a point in pursuing this.
What's the point, on the one hand, it's secular, and on the other hand, it is a spiritual thing. You've got to believe
what are you saying, though, Tony? Is this right that you leave that at the lodge?
You leave your standing in life. You are, when you enter Freemasonry, and you've obviously researched, you're a journalist, and I understand the basis of all good journalism is research. Though some of the things you seem to have researched on Freemasonry are not exactly accurate.
Well, what would those things be, though?
Your reference to the Duke of Kent as being the Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of the
United Grand Lodge.
He is the Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of England, the United Grand Lodge of England. Every free country in the world, and interestingly, one communist state has its own sovereign Grand Lodge in the free world. Each state in America is in itself a sovereign Grand Lodge. The Duke has been our Grand Master for over 30 years, has done much to bring Freemasonry back into the light.
What would you say to that, Tony?
Well, I mean, if you look at United Grand Lodge, they actually do make claims. If you have a look at their book, you've got lodges all over the world. In fact, many parts of the old British Empire have got lodges which are part of United Grand Lodge.
This is a secret society, and you say, but if you look into their book, can you tell me where you got that book?
This is the... I just got it on the internet. But it's...
But
this
if you
is,
walked into Freemasons Hall in London, you could buy it.
Yes, but it doesn't have all the details in there.
So this is
they have just the officers of some of the major lodges, and you'll have a scattering of information. But if you really want to know who your local Freemasons are, you have to get hold of something called the Provincial Yearbook.
Yes.
Most of the information from the Provincial Yearbook is not in that main book.
Well, you've got 48 provinces and districts. Can you imagine the size of the book if you try to put all into one book?
Well, there's hundreds of thousands of Masons, aren't there?
Yeah, but there are 48
What are the
problem
Freemasons are causing, though, Tony, in your opinion? What is the problem? Let's get to the crux of that.
The crux of the issue here is about accountability, and it's about the justice system, and it's about government mainly, about people who have influence and power in those institutions that are secretly Freemasons.
Okay, what do you say to that? Are you giving power to people within your lodges?
If I could come back to the Provincial Yearbook, first of all.
Okay.
Part of my responsibility is the Provincial Yearbook. We supply two Provincial Yearbooks to every library in South Wales. In fact, as I left the office the day before yesterday, we had an inquiry from the Public Library in Swansea who asked if they could have another two copies of my secretary's
book. A fully disclosed book?
That it gives you the list of every officer and every past master of every lodge in South Wales. A dreadful photograph of myself, shall I say. All the provincial officers of the year.
Yeah.
And also gives you details of all the other Masonic orders meeting in South Wales with their heads of order, their officers, their contact numbers. We have a website, which is you've been on our website.
Yes, I have indeed. Yeah.
Just how much more open do you want to be?
Are they allowed a secret, Tony?
Can I just pick up on that?
I want to come back to that. So, yeah, go ahead.
There are all of the names of people in the lodges are not in those provincial yearbooks. You've only got the senior officers. So there are people who are Freemasons who are simply not in that provincial yearbook.
And that you then say, come back to public accountability. I and my colleague John Hamill from Grand Lodge were involved some years ago in challenging the situation within the Welsh Assembly regarding the declaration of being a Freemason. Under the standing orders of the Welsh Assembly, you, if you were a member of the Assembly and failed to declare that you were a Freemason specifically, you were not only in breach of the standing orders, you were committing a criminal offence. However, if you belonged to the Ku Klux Klan or something like that, it was quite an order for you to keep that under wraps. when
actually no, because they were asking for declaration of all secrets.
I want to get back to the point though.
The standing order said purely Freemasons. We went there to challenge this.
Let's get back to the point that all organisations had to. Let's get back to the point what Tony was saying here just a minute ago, which was, if there's judges and people in power that are Freemasons, yeah, is that a bit of a problem in your opinion?
It's not a problem for me, but that we are also dealing with perception as well as fact. And I think that anybody who belongs to an organisation, which is a private organisation, and they're in public life, should declare their interest.
But do they? But do they?
I don't know. Within the Welsh Assembly, no, we do.
You're a Freemason, you're quite high up, you don't know.
But no, I don't know what the workings of various government bodies and that. But
no, what I'm asking is, there is obviously high-powered people within as Freemasons.
I'm not aware of any MP or AM in South Wales, in Wales, who is either a member or a Freemason.
I'm very happy to hear if it's true that all Freemasons in the Welsh Assembly have got their declared their interest.
I can tell you that
within England, it's not the case. For about 3 years in the early 2000s, all people who were councillors and MPs had to declare. It was a little box in your declaration of interest to say, are you a member of a secret society?
Right.
Now that obligation is gone. So we had a blip of about 2 years where actually there was an obligation to declare your Masonic membership.
If you ask me if I was a member of a secret society, even if there was a box there, I would say no, because I don't belong to a secret society. I belong to the oldest and most honourable fraternal order.
This is playing with words.
No, we're not debating the semantics here.
Let him have his...
It is not playing with words. You must ask people if they're declaring their interest. Then they should declare their interest, and I'm all for that. I'm all for transparency. What I don't want is for my members to be singled out, and I don't want my members to have their privacy invaded when it doesn't affect anybody else.
Now, who's to say it doesn't affect anybody else? Anyway, I would go one step further. I'd say you're a religious cult. Actually, you're much more than just a secret society. You have your temples in which you have various rituals that you do.
There is
an initiation ceremony, which is actually quite blood-curdling. Yeah. And I think that's a religious cult.
Right, okay.
Much worse than just a secret society.
Okay, Tony, your opinion, Jim.
I know this is rubbish in my life.
Right, okay, so you don't agree with that. I mean, what is it then? What is the Freemasons again?
It is a fraternal order. It's not the only fraternal order. There are several fraternal orders.
Just to remind ourselves.
There's hundreds of fraternal orders.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of other friendly societies which also had similar organisations within the labour movement.
It's a society with secrets, right? Hang on, Tony.
The initiation ceremony, you're actually bare your chest and you have a dagger pointing to your heart. You're telling me that does not make you a religious cult
it
as
is,
you're joining
it? Pure symbolism.
It's a threat of death to the new member.
Actually, he's got his... If you look at one of your rings, you've got a Masonic ring on that you carry with you to show that obviously that you're a Freemason. So I don't see that as a sort of a symbolism of anything horrible.
I think that if most people were to see, particularly the third degree ritual in Freemasonry, their flesh would creep. It's a blood-curdling ritual.
Right,
the new initiate swears allegiance to Freemasonry and actually freely declares that they can be murdered if they reveal the secrets. Now, this is the actual ritual.
It is not part of the ritual anymore. It was something that was an anachronism and it has been removed. However, you're just playing out play acting, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the day, but any Masonic oath that a brother takes as part of his membership of the order specifically excludes any contravention of the laws of any land in which he may live. And that all crimes and things like that are specifically included.
Right.
This business, we only look after our own, total nonsense.
Okay, we're going to take a break there, so it's time to take a break, but don't go anywhere. Both our guests are staying with us, and we'll see you after the break.
Visit themoreshow.co.uk/shop to purchase products and services from your favourite past guests. If you're new to this site, you can also catch up on the previous television and radio shows through YouTube and the More Show website.
Welcome back. For those who have just joined us, I'm here with Tony Goslin and Jim Bevan. Now, Jim, just quickly, tell us a bit about the beliefs of Freemasonry.
Well, the three bases of Freemasonry are brotherly love, relief and truth, which is affection for your own brethren, and mainly the practice of charity. Charity is the pillar, I think, on which Freemasonry rests. We raise our money within the organisation. We do not raise by asking for public subscription. But I think the last time I saw a pie chart, it was something like 55% of the money that goes out to non-Masonic causes.
So if someone's in help, in need of sort of monetary help in your organisation, then you help each other, basically?
Yes, we have a system where each lodge has an almoner. If a member is in difficulty, and it may not even be financial difficulty, he may need medical treatment or something like that, and it's not available on the National Health Service, then he would go to his lodge almoner, who would then get in touch with myself or the provincial almoner. If it was a matter of financial distress, because we have such a strong benevolent fund of our own here in South Wales, we deal with it by return of post, it up, put them in touch with the relative national charity, and then for as long as they are in need, they are helped.
So if Freemasons are doing such good work, Tony, what is your problem?
Look, I freely confess, it's a very seductive institution. A lot of Freemasons that have asked me to join, you feel that they've got all the time of day to spend with you, and they'll give you a drink and all this kind of thing, and it is extremely seductive. But when you actually look at these initiation ceremonies, which still take place within these Masonic temples, actually it's quite scary and frightening. And do you really want to sell your soul to join an organisation?
Are you selling your soul to become a Freemason?
No, it's a long time since anybody called me seductive for starters. and those who know me better don't try to get a drink out of me, but there we are. We're not selling our soul or anything. We have changed the rules, because it used to be that you had to be asked to join Freemasonry.
Yeah.
And now with the internet, we are getting so many applications, particularly from young people who want to become Masons or know more about it.
Why is that so?
Don't know. But there are more and more young people. We are getting more and more young people in university.
Could that
who want
be
to
due
join.
To books like Dan Brown's book?
It could well be. I mean, they say Mr. Brown has done very well. He's, other than myself and Tony, he's the only guy making money out of Freemasonry at the moment, isn't he?
Do you believe the book at all?
I mean, I have to admit, I didn't read it. I started to read it. I had an idea where it might end up. So I let my good lady read it and asked if the conclusion was right.
I have to disagree with you, though, because I think there's actually a bit of a crisis in Freemasonry right now, as people doubt it, as the internet has opened up a lot of old documentaries about Freemasonry, for example, for people to watch, where they're now thinking, actually, this looks like the sort of organisation I wouldn't want to touch with a barge pole.
Why?
Because of these initiation ceremonies.
So
what we're hearing here...
To what is an allegory?
Actually, you've got a new around your neck, you've got a dagger to your heart, and you're trying to tell me that this isn't a threat of death.
Pure symbolism. Do you know why the Romans particularly disliked and martyred the early Christians? Do you? Because the main taboo in Roman society was pretty relaxed. Wherever they went in the empire, they let the locals observe their custom. But the one thing that the ancient Romans disliked was cannibalism. And they saw the communion service as cannibalism. And that is why they did so many dreadful things and treated the early Christians
so
badly.
I think it's because the early Christian church was a threat to the Roman pagan gods. Actually, that's the reason. So the reason I think also that you've got a crisis is because people are finding out about Freemasonry. If you have a look, a lot of Freemasons are saying that there is a problem with people not returning, or people who've been initiated into the lodge is simply not turning up at lodge anymore, and also getting new recruits. And of course, privilege and promotion is one of the reasons that people join Freemasonry in a state where it's actually quite difficult to get a job, but increasingly difficult. People are going to join for privilege and promotion. Are those sort of people you want to join?
If people join Freemasonry on the basis that they're going to improve their own situation, they quickly become deluded and leave, because that is not what Freemasonry is all about.
What about those contacts?
What about the contacts
that they're making in the lodge to get
contacts?
Jobs and this sort of thing?
When I was in practice, you yourself
are in the building trade.
That's a good point. I'd like to bring up with both of you about the contacts. Is that possible that people could join for contacts?
In 25 years,
practicing as a
quantity surveyor, I never once encountered anybody who tried to use their Masonic membership to gain any influence over me. And if I had, I would have cut them dead.
Right. Well, the rest of us have to keep our fingers crossed on that one.
Well, yeah, I would like to think that most of my colleagues within the Institute of Chartered Surveyors have a professional standard.
Well, let's look into what goes on in the lodges when we're not talking about politics and we're not talking about religion. What do they talk about, Jim?
Well, often it's the complaint or how nice the meal is.
Okay.
How cheaper the beer is somewhere else.
Yeah.
And generally the quality of this dreadful ceremony that takes place, which people put a lot of work into learning, because it's learned, it's not read, it's learned.
Yeah.
And whoever wrote the Masonic ritual, no matter what Tony may say about it, if you pick up a Masonic ritual and read some of the charges there, it is some of the finest prose ever get in the English language. And I was, my appreciation of the written and spoken word was impressed on me in junior school.
Right, so there you go, Tony.
But why is it
there
then
go,
that as
all
people are being initiated,
all they're doing
one piece,
a good time.
A piece of film that was shown on an HTV documentary shows the initiate actually trembling, physically shaking, as he's being initiated into Freemasonry. Was that
pre-recorded? Was that staged?
No, it was a specific part of the initiation, which was allowed to be filmed.
Earlier, you said that they would not be allowed to film an initiation ceremony, and that is correct. You will never ever see film of an actual initiation. You'll see a part of it.
HTV 2002.
Nope.
We're going to move on to a different topic here.
I want to discuss as well about why aren't women allowed to be Freemasons?
Essentially, it's always been an all-male environment. There are two women's Freemasons lodges, Grand Lodges in this country.
So it's changing?
No. The ladies have their own Masonic organisation, and there are other what I would call quasi-Masonic organisations that admit men and women, but they are not recognised.
What about the whole thing about the secret handshakes?
It is a mode of recognition, which is allegedly taken back to the old craft lodges, where when you were apprenticed as an active Mason, building the cathedrals and the great buildings, the workshop of a Mason was known as the lodge.
And it is
so that the Freemasons of today have taken the symbolism of that craft, the craftsman in that lodge, and applied it into an allegorical situation.
And do the women have to do a sort of secret handshake?
I have no idea. I know some of our brethren, their ladies belong to this.
Yeah.
I would hate to think that my wife was a Lady Mason, because she might be better at the ritual than I. So I really don't understand it. I know that the WY let ladies in, men in, though, but I don't
do
really
you want
understand.
So is there a solid answer on why women aren't allowed then?
It's just historical. It's only in recent years that, not that
but
far
about,
distant, when ladies didn't have the vote in this country. Yeah?
Would you change? Are you willing to?
I don't see the need for it.
Right, okay.
There is an accommodation within, there's only one male Grand Lodge in this country, but there
I think it could be now illegal for you to have an organisation allow women in.
No, it's
and
not.
Also, I mean, this is really archaic, isn't it? You're coming from like medieval times or something.
We are archaic. Well, some people will take Freemasonry back to the
building
of the pyramids.
Why are you so afraid of allowing women into the lodges?
I'm not afraid of allowing women into the lodges. I'm going to a lunch tomorrow.
Into a lodge.
In the Masonic Hall in Cardiff.
When will we see a woman's name in your lodge?
The ladies will be in the main temple there.
But they can't join the lodge.
No.
But then you are a separate society to
we're a private organisation.
You're a private organisation, like you say. So
I think this says it all. It actually says it all. That actually Freemasonry is an institution that's had its day. I think we're going to see in the future actually less people becoming part of Freemasonry because they see it as very archaic and sexist.
What do you have to say to that?
We'll see.
Okay. So what about, I wanted to talk briefly about some of the videos out there which sort of, you know, sort of damage and sort of discriminate Freemasonry, especially on the internet. Have you seen some of these documentaries and sort of self-published material that people post?
No, I haven't. I don't take much interest in it, but I know it's out there.
Yeah.
Similarly, mm-hmm. there were other... It's only an electronic form of the pamphleteering, anti-Masonic pamphleteering that was going on in the 18th century.
Anti-Masonic. And who's doing this kind of stuff?
I don't know.
Well, people like me.
People like you.
But also, more seriously, it's ex-Masons. People who've left for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And I think these are the more credible sources. I think you might actually agree, mightn't you, Jim?
No, I don't agree.
People
because
who've left.
As I've said earlier, some people join Freemasonry with the wrong idea that they're going to get something out of it. You get nothing out of Freemasonry you don't put into it. And when you come into Freemasonry, you come in, you know all about our ritual and the initiation ceremony. Now, tell us something else about it, is that you come in there without any money in your pocket and with no metallic substance of value about your person.
But how do you pay your
so you
subs
enter
if you haven't got any money?
You enter into the lodge poor and penniless.
What good would it do, Tony, if the Freemasons weren't there? I mean, obviously, they're doing a lot of good, aren't they, to helping each other and helping the community. Come on.
The whole thing is elitist. It's the profane, how the Freemasons in their books talk about the rest of us. They see themselves as somehow spiritually superior. And
are you saying that from a stance because you were denied being allowed to be a Freemason?
No, I haven't been denied. I've been asked several times and I've declined. All I'm saying is I think we need to have more equality in our society.
Why did you decline?
I'm not interested in going through these ceremonies, right? These initiation rites where...
You would deprive other people of their
where
privilege.
There's a threat of death.
Well, that's a good point.
I'm not saying that people shouldn't be allowed to be Masons. All I'm saying is it should be open and accountable. That's all I'm saying, particularly with regards to our courts, our crown courts, our judicial system, and the highest areas of politics.
I couldn't agree with you.
What's happened is that Freemasons have blocked this. What about chief police officers who are Freemasons?
What about them?
This is a problem.
Can you name me one of the members of our...
Right now, no, because they don't have to declare their interests, do they? They should have to. That should be a very basic part of our criminal law.
Not one member of ACPO is a Freemason.
There you go.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
But again,
I've stated it on public record.
Yeah.
What about Hugh Orde? It was connected with the Orange Order.
You say you don't believe Jim.
But then
obviously, you know, Jim probably feels the same way on a lot of the things that you're saying.
I read the book by Stephen King. Is it Stephen?
Stephen Knight.
How that guy could be so accurate about some aspects of Freemasonry?
But he showed the chief of the anti-terrorist police
far off. Based on some of the other things
he said. Showed that some of the senior police in London, the Metropolitan Police, were Freemasons.
When was the book published?
In the 1980s.
Could that be a conflict 70s. Of interest? Could that be a conflict of interest, Jim, for police to be Freemasons?
I think that, you know, and this is a personal opinion, okay?
Yeah.
That when you take on certain jobs or positions in public life, you should be seen to be above suspicion. And I remember having a discussion with the late Lord Tonopandy, George Thomas, not long before he died. And George Thomas was a Mason.
Yeah.
He was initiated into a lodge in Penarth. But he became he resigned from the lodge and became what is known as an unattached Mason. And I asked him why he did that. And he said that he felt that when he entered politics, he had to show that he was representing everybody in his constituency, Masons and non-Masons.
Yeah.
And he said that he felt that having stood back from Freemasonry, he was still a Mason, he would be a Mason to the day he died.
One thing, Tony, that you want to say to Jim?
Well, I think, you know, Masons should themselves read John Robison, who was himself a Freemason's book, which was written in the late 1700s. I know this is going a way back, but he was a senior Freemason. He was also a close friend of James Watt, the inventor of the steam engine. Mm. He was also the secretary of the Royal Society in Edinburgh. Yep. And he could see that actually Freemasonry, which used to be, I think, a very good fraternal society, like you're saying, was being taken over in the 1800s. And actually, there was all sorts of new aspects to it coming in through this organisation they call the Illuminati, which were actually poisoning the society he loved. Well, and okay. I think if most Freemasons today could read that and see that, and they'd be rather worried. Okay.
And I would then offer for your reading list a book by Sir James Stubbs, who was the past Grand Secretary of the United Grand Lodge of England, concerning his life in Freemasonry, which is a little bit more up to date than Brother Robison, and might give you a better understanding of what Freemasonry is.
Well, we can agree on that.
Tony, what, good.
I'll have a look at your book.
And one very quick thing, Jim, that you'd like to say to Tony.
I would just like to spend more time with Tony and try and answer his questions and dispel his misgivings.
Okay.
More than we've been able to do.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much both for joining us today. It's been a complete pleasure to have you both on. It really has. So for more information on Tony Gosling or Jim Bevan, visit my website, themoreshow.co.uk. Stay tuned, because after the break, I'll be joined by a video link with regressionist therapist Dolores Cannon.
If you like what you watch, then don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest updates on The More Show. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel for new weekly television and radio shows.